Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast from La Belle Province. This week, the Geeks invade Gamers Vault, interviewing its owner, Dan the Moose Man.
What's up?
So sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of the North. This is our lucky 10th episode. Apparently, if you make it 10, you're going to make it, so yay us. So this week, I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, Antoine Bergeron.
Hello.
Yeah, apparently I can't talk tonight. It's because I'm shy. Because we have a new guest host with us today.
Oh, yeah.
The sweet, sultry voice of Dan. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Isn't it the 7th that's supposed to... You have your itch, the 7th itch,
yeah, yep. Right? Yeah.
Is it 7th? So I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
This is not going well for the rest of the show, folks.
No, it's the opposite. We passed the 7th, you're on the 10th. Things are good, no infidelity, and...
No infidelity. Well, we are talking about whoring ourselves out to other podcasts, but, I'm trying to stay faithful to Antoine.
There you go.
Steve is trying to seduce me away to do a Warhammer podcast on the side. Antoine and I do have an open relationship, though, so... All right, so this episode is going to follow our standard format. We're going to do some hobby time, talk about the games we've played, then we're going to do our upcoming events, and then our news and points of interest. Then we're going to do our main interview, which will be with Dan. By then, we'll probably be sick of him, so then we're going to wrap up the show.
Too much Dan.
You can never have too much Dan, because that's what the ladies say.
All right.
All right. So let's jet right on the hobby time, and I will get this started. I've been doing some work on my Warpole Skinwalkers from Circle, so I got those guys pretty much done now. I've got one cloak to touch up with my airbrush, and then just the basing, and that unit's done. Meaning that I'm at my 25-point goal for TempleCon.
Good, good.
I may try to do another 10 points, just a couple solos, maybe the unit attachment for the Skinwalkers to make them useful, because as a base unit, they're kind of terrible. But, we'll see how time goes, because someone else added something else to my workload that I wasn't planning on. But I'll get into that in a moment. And, I actually started also to unbox my Tomb King army. That someday I may paint or something. So I ended up with a horde of Ushabti, which are terrible but look awesome. So I've been assembling those. Made a fine cast. The best material known to man, as you all know. They're actually pretty good. I don't know how long they've been in stock. Some of them have some bubbles, so it might be some older casts that have been sitting around. Because I doubt there's been a huge rush on Ushabti.
Yeah.
At least it's been proven that they don't melt in the sun on a dashboard.
That's true. That's true. Though I don't usually leave my miniatures out in the car.
Exactly.
I don't know why you would.
You might drop them behind your couch on the heater.
I've done that. I've actually tried to, stupidly to grab the, almost molten hot metal model out of the heater that was sitting there all day in an electric heater. Because, that's where he is! And then without thinking, it was bad.
Sizzle.
Yeah, models get hot in a heater. Yeah, so that's really about it for my hobby in the last couple weeks. I was away. I was in Las Vegas for CES, so I missed a bunch of good hobby time there. So with that, I'll pass it on to Antoine, who's been overachieving.
Yeah, before I go, so you haven't started anything from your Adepticon list for the for your elves?
No.
Okay, that's what you were mentioning. Okay.
No, that's another thing on top of the other thing.
Another thing, okay.
Yeah, because this guy I know decided he was going to run a Drop Zone Commander tournament at TempleCon.
Okay, that.
So I figure I kind of have to support the local guy.
By going to a tournament in Rhode Island.
Yes. Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense to me either. But for some reason, I felt guilty. So I dug up my Drop Zone Commander models, and I'm going to have to learn a game because I've never played the damn thing.
But they're almost fully painted.
Yeah, until I decided to change the paint scheme.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe not my smartest move. We'll see how it goes.
Maybe not.
I'm not even sure what the... I haven't looked at the tournament info yet, so I don't know how many points we're supposed to be making a list for. Is that assuming that's up on the TempleCon site?
It's going to be 1,000.
Okay, we'll get into the term info later. So 1,000 points I could probably do, so I should be good. And then, when I get back from TempleCon, I have to paint something like 15 archers and 6 Illyrian Reavers and some other...
Phoenix?
Oh, I had a Phoenix. Yeah, but that's okay. The Phoenix won't take long. That's all airbrush shenanigans, so I'll power through that. Yeah, so back to you.
Okay, back to me. I finished my mold model. Yeah, finish it. Well,
you need some more liquid English, sir.
Yeah, I should. So I finished Molg, the ancient Trollblood model. I also was able to finish Janissa Stonetide, which is another Trollblood solo.
She's the boobs, right?
Yeah, okay. Troll boobs.
Boobs and chin.
Yep. Yeah, giant chin. She's the... I'm drawing a blank. The guy from Dawn of the Dead. Not Dawn of the Dead, but Army of the Dead.
Army of Darkness?
Army of Darkness, yeah.
So she's Bruce Campbell, yeah, but in female troll form? Bruce,
nice.
Female.
Bruce Campbell. If chins could kill? Yeah. Great book, by the way, If Chins Could Kill. Worth reading.
Outside of that, I had another Trollblood model started before the end of the league, which was a Felcaller, so it's halfway done. I'll finish it so it doesn't stay on my painting table for the next year. And after that, one day with Theodore at home, my son, he was in my gaming room. We were working on some craft project with him, and he saw one of my Relic Knights box. It was a Pacer, which are a Cersei, like, speed drone they use for...
You said they're like little robots, aren't they?
Yeah, little robots that they use to patch the road during race and stuff like that.
Wow, we could use some of those in Quebec.
Yeah, we could. And he fell in love with that model and asked me to start assembling him and paint it. So we ditched the craft and started working on a miniature with my son.
And you have never been so proud in your life, right?
It has begun. Maybe not. I was planning to do the whole fashion at the same time in airbrush, so it threw my plan totally out of whack.
Well, didn't you get like 42 of those Pacer models with your Kickstarter?
No, only two, and I sold one.
Oh, wow. Fool.
No, that's fine. I'll have one. They're my second faction. So okay. I wasn't even planning to paint the Cersei this year. So
that's sad that we planned for years in advance. Okay, next year I'm going to paint this year.
Yeah.
It's like my New Year's resolution. I'm going to paint two fantasy armies, 2,500 points this year.
That's still a lot.
Yeah. That's on top of everything else I have to do for tournaments now. So the tournaments that I don't play, I'll be painting a lot.
So we assembled it and we started painting it. He helped me, but once he was in bed that night, I went over the base coats, smoothed it, and started shading. So that's all I did for my hobby.
Cool. Dan, I see the document is blank over here, but it's because I think you, instead of editing the online... Dan works in technology, by the way. And so I find it interesting that we have a Google Doc we shared with him, which is our show notes. So Dan prints it out and writes on it in hand. So that's
we technology. We got a roll. In the last minute. So, I did something interesting that I haven't done in a long time, and that was assemble some Lego models with my son over the holidays. I thought that was really cool. At the hobby side, Lego is
what it used to be, eh?
It ain't what it used to be. Like, for me, Lego, the idea of it was you have a pile of stuff, and you do stuff.
You create something with it.
And just following the instructions, we were basically assembly lining it with my 4-year-old. You know what? It looks good. They give you options, but I definitely miss the pile of stuff. However, the fact that he plays with it immediately after means that it turns into a pile of stuff once post-assembly. And you do get a pile of different ships and stuff missing all kinds of parts. So in the end, it works.
That's funny, because I played with Theodore, and he doesn't go through the instructions. He gets boards and start building robots and stuff like that.
My son takes the instructions as I'm trying to do the not RTFM, the model. He's putting the instructions in my face. Daddy, read instructions.
It's probably kid. I prefer to build the models by the rules and have them displayed, which Taylor is...
Right. It comes down to
the
idea of what the Lego movie was all about with the Craggle and the dad and the hobby. But really, I mean, I think my son actually asks me to watch Talking Lego off Netflix, which is the inside Lego documentary. He likes that better than watching the cartoons, because he's seeing all the models and stuff. It's pretty amazing where that stuff has come from and where it's going and where it's at.
Have you been to any of the Lego stores that opened up here?
No.
Because I know there's one in Fairview.
Right?
I don't know if there must be others.
Yeah. I've been to the one in New York City.
Like, oh, okay. Well, the ones here are going to be poopy compared to that.
Right, so. Right. But it's amazing what they've done. Apart from that, as Paul has mentioned, basically, Gamers Vault will be hosting the Drop Zone Commander tournament at TempleCon, and so my Drop Zone Commander army has come up to the top of the list of stuff to do. So I originally had the basic units commissioned by Guillaume, which...
Guillaume Lemachin, our other host.
Yeah, if you've been listening to the podcast. He did an amazing job. He actually did that a painting exchange
two years ago.
At which he painted the model, and right away I fell in love with it. I asked him to do the rest of the army that I had at the time. And I've tried to successfully replicate, without the extreme finer details, his basic washing and shading, and it came out really well. So I'm going to continue that, at least to have
all the base colors on.
Base colors shaded and stuff.
Well, you could always, in theory, either detail it yourself later or ask him to detail
exactly.
it.
Exactly, you know. But the basics is pretty nice. So I'll be working on that for TempleCon. That's about it for my hobby.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm tempted to pick up a UCM army, because that's the army I really wanted to play originally.
Yeah.
But other people already had it.
But so nobody's playing anyway.
But so no one's playing, so I may have to buy a whole bunch of models later tonight.
Okay. The UCM are the regular humans?
Yeah, the Marines. Their tanks look kind of silly because the guns are on boom arms, so they can shoot over terrain.
Articulated.
But I love that kind of square-ish look, and I love their giant APC command vehicle.
Well, the drop ship is totally out of Aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
So, very much, and it's. Oh, I think they've done a pretty good job.
The plastic starter box is them, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and they have the plastic see-through canopies. Very nice. Hmm. What I thought was really cool is how they totally orcified the resistance fighters that were left on the planet and that are fighting this invasion. I've got
those helicopters
and the school buses. The school buses.
I hate. I'll be honest. I dislike
the Mad Max part.
The Mad Max.
Oh, okay.
I really, actually, you know what? The Resistance had a lot of cool tank. Like, they had the best tank in the game, according to the creator. Yeah. We spoke to Dave, the creator of Drop Zone Commander at Gen Con, and he was talking about how they have the most powerful tank in the game right now. And they have those choppers. But I know you really want to paint the choppers, so I couldn't no. I couldn't steal that from under you.
I like all their military part.
Yeah.
I don't like the ramshackle stuff.
Yeah, same here. I like all the military-looking stuff, because it looks like modern military. Even though I'm not really a military type guy.
Neither.
But I like the look of it, but I hate the ramshackle. And apparently, he's like, you don't have to use a lot of ramshackle, but you kind of have to have them.
Yeah, for the concept of what they represent.
Well, no, it's because I think the basic, the core units are those, right? It'd be like having a Space Marine army with no Space Marines in it. It's like, so you kind of have to take them. Yeah. Like, so you don't have to have a lot, but you have to have some. And I'm like, man, I don't want those.
I'd be really interested if they do some, because they haven't done any cross-faction stuff, like a mercenary, but assuming the concept of the UCM and the Resistance are...
I just don't think the Scourge would use mercenaries.
No, absolutely. Scourge would... But you never know, they might, you know, there might be a Sheltari slash...
There's all Sheltari are actually kind of mercenary-ish, so that could very well be... Like, I kind of picture the Scourge as being Cthulhu. I don't know why. Cool, awesome. So, let's go back and we'll discuss games. I did not play any games. Well, actually, that's not entirely true. So, like I said, I was away. I was in Las Vegas. But while I was there, being bored out of my mind and stuck in a different time zone, so I couldn't really talk to my family and stuff, I started playing Hearthstone, which is Blizzard's card game. Yeah.
Online.
Yeah, it's online, and it's kind of addictive. It takes me back to my Magic days, and I remember why I gave up Magic. Because it's, you know, you can... So they're clever, Blizzard. So evil. So you play the game, right? And as you're playing the game, you have, I think it's 9 basic characters, which are the basic characters. I play WoW, or I used to play WoW. So you have your 9 character classes or whatever. And as you play them, you unlock all their basic cards. So at the end of playing a bunch of times, I think when they hit level 10, because they level your decks level up, or the characters level. I don't really know what it does, but it unlocks the cards. And so after level 10, I think you have all your basic cards. And then you can either buy packs with real money, or you can complete daily quests, which might be, you know, do 100 points of damage to enemy minions, right? Or win 3 games online, whatever. And then it'll give you gold. And you can use that gold. Once you hit 100 gold, you can buy a pack. So I played a lot.
I watched the instructions.
And I was tempted. I hovered in that buy screen where you can spend your gold to like, buy a pack. It's like, oh, it's... five packs is only $7. And that finger hovered over it, mister. I was so close. And I was like, no. Close call. Turned off the iPad, walked away. Yeah. It was close several times. So you're saying you watched the intro?
Yeah, I watched the all the instructions. They have instruction videos for the game. I almost installed it.
It's, you know what? It's fun. It's fun, it's simple, and I don't find it... I played a lot of it, but I can walk away from it. And it's well put together, because it doesn't have... At least from my perspective, early on, I mean, I'm not a pro player, right? So, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of the drawbacks Magic did. But it feels enough like Magic to make me feel nostalgic.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanics are pretty straightforward. You know, every turn you get a mana, cards have a mana cost, models have health and damage. Health is persistent, which I thought was an interesting change from Magic.
Yep.
So if you do 3 damage to a model, or to a card, that damage carries over the next turn. So if it had 4 health, it's only got 1 health until...
It's reset.
Yeah. Which in Magic's not the way it is, right? And there's no blocking in this game. You pick your target. You attack the model, you attack the card, you attack the opposing caster or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's no block. The only models that can block are models that have taunt. I keep saying models, but cards that have taunt. And then you have to attack those. You have to attack cards with taunt before you can attack the opposing player.
It's aggro.
Yeah, exactly. It's an element out of the MMO, right?
Right.
So anyway, I thought it was well put together. It's worth checking out.
Well, I see a lot of the the online gamers at Gamers World having Hearthstone running in the background while they're waiting for people to like choose their heroes in League of Legends, or they're playing another game. So it's amazing, like this multitasking gaming that people are doing these days. They're playing Hearthstone, waiting, and you can just let it go, right?
Well, it can if you're playing single player, yeah.
Right. And then on the other side, they're doing their League of Legends MMO or their RTS or whatever it may be, and the interim, oh, they'll do a move in Hearthstone and come back. So it's interesting how
actually I don't know how that would work.
That works
because Hearthstone, your turn times out if you don't do stuff.
I guess they're going back. They're multitasking, man.
Yeah, I guess they're all tabbing, or they just don't care because it's a single player game. Exactly. And, you know, they're playing like one of the single player things, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that's funny. I never think of doing that. I can really concentrate on one thing.
Well, I think that's the concept of the online gamer. It actually it promotes multitasking and being able to manage an army and in 5 different fronts or you know.
Yeah,
I think
that's true.
That's one of the things, and that's, you know, it actually makes you wonder. Well, there's all these, you know, studies of is this good for you? Is this bad for you? And you know, and people take it so many different ways.
Ultimately, I don't think we'll ever know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sorry, let's refocus. Okay, we're very good at like segueing into other things. It's a key feature of our podcast that we can't stay on topic. Basically, Hearthstone is all the gaming I did in Vegas. I didn't even do any like gambling gaming because I suck, and I'm scared of gambling because I know if I can't gamble. I've got such a type A personality. Like I have to win. Like if I started losing, I know I'd be like, okay, I can just play some more to win back what I've lost, which is what they want. Ticket. And that's what they want, right? So I refuse to be that guy. So Antoine, just as in painting, I see you made up for my lack of gaming with a bunch of games.
Well, made up. That much. We haven't recorded in 3 weeks, I think. Maybe more.
It was a whole Christmas and then New Year's. And
yeah, we recorded early for the previous one, and we're recording late this time. So there was a bunch of time. I was able to attend one of the Journeyman League night here at Gamers Vault. I played 2 games, one versus Patrick with his Legion, which ended quickly and sadly with his caster beaten down by Mulg.
Sadly, you say?
For him.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I don't recall you ever being that merciful against me. I'm sorry, Paul, I don't mean to be kicking your ass.
Maybe.
No, that never happened.
We don't play War Machine enough, then.
We'll fix that. We'll fix that. I need practice before TempoCon.
Yeah, that's fine. And I played a second game. My second game during the league versus Daniel Meyer. His Retribution. He was playing Kalisa again. It was a real tight game. And also my first loss of the Journeyman. We were both playing new stuff. I made horrible mistakes. Mulg, which is one of the giant AV Warbeasts they have, has a special rule that each time his warlock is damaged, he can move and attack the person that or the model that damaged it.
And I guess he moves in the direction of the
person. Yeah. I was attacked maybe 10, 12 times during the game, at least, because it has a lot of range that ignore cover or intervening models.
And you just forgot that mold could do that?
The only time I did it, I was boxed between four other models and couldn't do it. So I just moved half an inch and didn't do anything. I forget it all the other turn.
I've actually been destroyed by that Mulk just coming after you as you're hitting him. Or I think you can do the same thing with the caster.
If the caster is damaged, Mulk can attack the attacker.
Right.
Yeah. So I completely forgot that, did horrible mistake, and he tried to do a caster kill run on my warlock. And I barely survived. I was all set up to kill him. I had Spare Fury on my warlock, so I went and cast a spell on Kaelisa, which I totally forgot that she has an ability. If a spell is cast on her or her battle group, one of them can move. So it just moved away out of range of anything I could do and killed me the turn after.
I like to think you were giving them a chance.
No, it was late. I was playing quick. And I was playing with probably two or three new units during the game, too, so it doesn't help. But I made honest mistake and then was able to capitalize on it. So,
yeah, and actually, I want to just mention, I know Dan's a listener.
Yep.
And I just want to give it, I know it's not the shout-out time, but I want to give a little shout-out to Dan.
Oh, you should.
Because I think the fact that he donates his time to run these events at the Vault and to kind of champion that community, I think that's awesome. I think we need more people like him in hobby gaming.
Yes, we do.
I should probably follow his example, but I'm lousy at committing to stuff, so I won't.
It's also hard because, like me, you play a bunch of games and switch back and forth between them. And if you're not concentrated on one, like I try to be a press ganger, but I just don't play enough War Machine
at a time.
So I play it like 12 games in 4 weeks. And don't play for months.
Yeah.
So it's not good when you're trying to promote.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the beauty of things like the Journeyman League, giving you that fresh start and giving you the opportunity to either get into the game, start something new, add on to what you've done. It's a beautiful system to enjoy the hobby, enjoy the gaming, find the community. It's really...
It's even fun for veterans like myself. I've been playing for almost 10 years, but I tried to play only stuff I never played in my faction during this league.
Right. Yes, it's a great way to try new stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah. I was able to learn it slowly because it's an escalation league. You start slow, you start to learn your model, and as you play, you add stuff, and I added stuff I never played with. So
put a new dress on an old girlfriend.
And this is actually stuff that's brought to you by the manufacturer, which is a really good promotion for their own game.
Absolutely. And
at the same time,
they do a good job with organized play.
They're helping the community. They're helping everything.
So. It helps the stores, right? It drives everything.
Yeah.
So all that to say, good job, Dan. Thanks for the hard work.
Yeah.
And back to Antoine's games.
Yeah. What else you got going on? After that, we had a family dinner with Papa Guillaume, which is another Guillaume in our group.
We're far too many Guillaumes.
Yeah, far too many.
Three, Guillaume. Four.
Yeah, no, at least, if not more.
You know, the sad part is, I don't know, for years I knew him as Papa Guillaume. I had no idea what his family name was. I know he was Papa Guillaume, and that was it.
Yeah, same here.
So we had a dinner with the wives and kids. And once everything was done, kids were plugged in front of a movie, we played our first game, his first game of Relic Knight. His faction is almost fully painted, which is fun, but he never played, so we had an intro game.
He's a quick painter, too. I know he paints a lot, and he paints fast.
Yes, yes. So he had his Cersei Speed Circuit versus Mass Shattered Sword, and the game was fun. He was really unlucky on his draws, having really good cards, but not for the model he was activating. So it went quick on my way, and I almost crushed him, but the seeing how the game plays, how the interaction goes, how the activation queue work was interesting. I think he really liked it, and he's looking forward for this game or next game.
So, nice.
Which was fun. And on top of that, I found out while looking for other stuff in one of my books, an old game, HeroQuest.
Oh, that's worth a small fortune if you wanted to sell it.
Yeah, but it's the Canadian, French-Canadian version, which is not the same.
No, I don't want that. Never mind. No, I'm
just kidding. It's not just that it's in French. It's that the stuff in it is not the same as the US version, which was a lot more interesting. So it's probably worth something, but it's all half-assed painted with tester doll color. I found one of the old glass bottle in the game.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and it's not my copy. It's one of Mary's copies. So I found that, and I had the idea to try it out with Theodore. So we didn't play the full game. We just played with... I made like one room with a monster and told him to roll the dice to see how far he could move and start...
Like a simplified version.
Yeah, a really, really simplified version with only one character, not four. But we played... I think we're up to our third or fourth game. So he likes it. He likes it quick.
You're glowing.
He's losing interest pretty quickly. But when we go fast...
He is four.
Yeah, yeah. That's why.
Could be worse, right? You could have handed him like 7th edition 40K. Okay, read this, son. We'll come back and we'll talk.
No. It'll be more of the fast game, fast and done type.
I wonder if you could... Have you tried Super Dungeon?
It's my next one, but I've been recommended Heroica, the Lego games.
Yep.
Which could be simpler and more approachable for him, and he already knows Lego and loves them, yeah. So he could build his own dungeons and stuff like
that. The other thing I was thinking is, what about Crowmaster? I don't know how complicated that game is.
It's a high investment point.
Yeah, and it's more involved as a game.
Is it? I've looked at it. I think it looks really interesting. I know the game is, I think, is about $70 for the starter box, $70-$75, something like that. But I didn't know how complicated the game was. But I mean, it's pre-painted. It's chibi, cartoony. Like it's got a lot of appeal for kids.
Yeah, all the intro scenarios are playable on the web. So I did play them, and there's a bunch of abilities, and it's not simple.
Endless fantasy tactics.
Even that.
Just get rid of all this. Make no special abilities.
I would go for Super Dungeon Explorer then, because the dice are simpler. You have stars. You can just count them. He doesn't have to check threshold and stuff like that. So, HeroQuest was simple because you have skulls, shields, and bad guys' shields.
Yeah.
So you compare. And
the same thing with Super Dungeon. It says compare. My number is bigger than your number.
Stars versus the other stars. So.
But you see, I was thinking because of Endless Fantasy, you show them the rule book. Mm-hmm. We like, see this picture here? Daddy painted this model.
Daddy made the board, you see.
Yeah, that Daddy made the board.
In that book. But that's it. That's all I did gaming wise.
Okay, Dan, you're up. Cool. Do you want any gaming?
Yeah, well, I'm a big board gamer, and over the holidays, I decided to bring a couple of board games to play it with family and friends. Machikoro, what a great little game!
I know. I tried to pick it up. You sold out.
No, they're back. They're back.
I know, but I came on Boxing Day to buy one.
Oh, yeah.
To play to play on New Year's Eve with my wife and her family. And as I was going to pick it up, you pulled it out, handed it to this guy, like, oh, you buy this? I'm like, no! And then that was the end of Machikoro for me.
Machikoro, a great seller, a great game. It is a tableau-building dice game where there's amazing interaction between all the players. Yeah. Plays well in two, plays well in three, plays well in four. Expansions coming out. Played it with my girlfriend's family, and her mom won. Her mom was playing, and she totally wrecked everybody, because there's a part of the game where if you roll a six, you get to steal money from everybody in the game, or you get to police a pretty amazing move. And she just kept rolling sixes. Every time it was her turn, she kept on rolling a six, and she just devastated everybody and finished the game. It's very fast game.
And you actually said something interesting earlier off-air. We're talking about this, and you mentioned how old she was?
She is in her late 70s, yeah.
Right. So it's really a game anyone can play.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a super simple, straightforward, fun game. And it's been out for years, though I think the English translation's
exactly
new.
It's a Japanese game, and it recently launched. And it's taken. I've been
no
selling,
tentacles
it,
involved,
selling it off the shelf, so it's continuous. Another game. This is a game I find is probably the best themed game that I've ever played as a board game. Firefly, the board game. Wow. The way they've integrated the theme. So if you are a Firefly fan, you are going to be in love with this game. It has every single fluff that you're dealing with. All the concept of the game is you need to build a crew. You have a spaceship, usually a Firefly, but they've introduced additional expansion, other ships. You build a crew for that ship. You find a job and you keep flying, and stuff goes wrong all the time. Reavers are after you, the Alliance is after you, and you just have to complete your jobs and get them done, get some money, and there's some goals to win the game. And then the Bounties expansion allows you to start more effectively interacting with the other ships in terms of boarding them or in terms of putting a bounty on someone's head, on one of their crew. So it's actually really, really cool, and the scenarios are great. I played that with my two sons, and we played for 4 hours, I think.
Yeah, I like how that box says 2 hour yeah. game length. I have never seen a game completed in 2 hours. Even right. playing the simplest intro game with no real mission aside from get a certain amount of money, I have never seen it completed in 2 hours.
Lots of bits, lots of chits to set up.
They have and take down. An intro scenario on the website that's supposed to be quicker and let you finish the game in a...
I mean, it's always been a good game, and I've never regretted playing it, but I've never seen it finish in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that was one of the only games I think I've ever gotten Christy to play, where she didn't walk away halfway through because she was bored and done. Though I think that may have been because my buddy Alex was trying to start by doing Mishka missions.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And it was like, he just kept trying and failing over and over again. So he stayed like in that one spot on the board for like 10 turns, trying desperately to do it, this Mishka mission that they didn't have the crew for or the capability. But he refused to give up.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's hilarious.
That's the beauty of the game, is that you're actually, you can play it and just fluff it out, and you're going around, and you can do side stuff in the game. It's not like you're, you know, and so I think it's just the way they've adapted the Firefly theme to a board game. Amazing. What I did for the Gamers Vault staff Christmas dinner is I pulled out Fiasco.
Yeah, I heard it was a little of a fiasco.
And it was a fiasco.
Something about typical Dan not knowing all the rules, and like every turn was a new rule being added because Dan...
So I tried to research it. I played Fiasco a couple times in the past, and you know what? I think the concept of the game is just to get everybody to roleplay, and it's a GM-less RPG, and everybody's just contributing to a story, and it doesn't really matter who wins, who loses, or whatever is going on. And the dice in the game are just a silly kind of addition. And the thing is to get everybody involved in that, to involve in the story. And you get a lot of laughs out of it. Now, we played a paranoia adaptation of Fiasco. It lasted a couple of rounds, and then we were like, okay, let's eat our... We were at... what's it called?
The Milsa.
Brazilian... Milsa. So we
it's
were
good thing I know where your staff
yeah.
is.
Followed by, I'm sure, I don't know if anybody's seen it on Facebook, the annual tobogganing night.
Yeah, I saw the video.
Yeah, so that was another fiasco. Apart from that, recently played a little bit of, I learnt Dust Battlefield. So Guillaume set up the staff Guillaume, set up a Dust Battlefield, learn your Dust night. So I decided to bring in my monkeys and play some of that, and that's amazing how they've sped up the game.
It's so streamlined.
Yeah,
I hated Warfare. I wanted to like Warfare, but I hated Warfare.
I think it's just that next level. I think Warfare is really just the next level.
Well, the thing is, this doesn't play like Warfare though.
No, not at all.
This plays more like Dust Tactics, the board game, right?
Right. And you're basically playing Dust Tactics with the measurement, but the rules have been changed and streamlined.
Yeah, it's very, very smooth. Yeah. And it's a fun game. Guillaume will be happy to hear me say, this. Because I know he just silently, you know, quietly dreams of me playing more games with him. So
I really like the idea of gorillas with power gloves coming after you. And if they reach you, it's like...
I hate those gorillas. The one game I played with Guillaume, I died to so many gorillas.
Right. And you know, and you can have fun. So I'm a 40K orc player. I'm a gorilla player in Dust. And I just love the randomness of some of these factions when you can play them.
Well, you get all the weird science stuff, right? The zombies and the gorillas. Yeah, and
that's on the Axis side. So that was great. So a great learning experience. Really nice nice upgrade to or mid-grade to a game that was already out. And that's pretty much me in the last 30 days.
Cool. Well, okay. So why don't we take a break? And then we'll come back and we'll do our upcoming events and then do our news. So, yeah, we'll be right back, geeks.
Sounds good.
And we're back. Okay, so upcoming events. Dan, take it away.
Well, we've got the 40K tournament. It's an Escalation League event, a final event for our Escalation League on January 25th. It's 2,000 points of 40K. That's going to be at 11 a.m. on the 25th.
Just be clear, that's open to anyone, right? Not members of the Escalation League?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So we will be giving out prizes for the Escalation League, but also a prize for the tournaments.
And it's three rounds?
Yes, three rounds.
Perfect. Okay.
After that, we've got a Netrunner Store Championship on the 31st. It starts at 12, and that's a $10 entry fee.
Cool. Awesome.
Next up, Canadian Shield Tournament in Ottawa. They still have place for all three games. So on January 31st, they have the Warhammer Fantasy and the War Machine tournament. And on February 1st, they have the 40K tournament. It's $35 per day or $60 if you register for both days. So two of the tournaments.
And I think the guys from One Plus Armor are going to be at that, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because that's how they ducked our challenge again, is by saying they had to go to a tournament that day. So I guess if our fans want to go there and beat them for us, just like a preview of what we're going to do to them, they could do that.
Yes, they can.
For the low price of $35 a day. Excellent. Okay. Following that, I'm so going to get in trouble for talking smack.
If I remember correctly, Andrew is helping run the tournament, so he won't be beaten. But Nick and Logan could be beaten.
Well, there we go. I'm such a good trash talker. It's awesome.
Yeah, you fit right there with Andrew.
I know.
And I fit right there with Nick, and we're so bad, both of us.
Well, their acceptance video to our challenge was hilarious, as Nick just like, it's not in character.
No.
It's a personality thing, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna be a type A jerk like me to be good at that. You know, some of the things I've said to Dan over the years just aren't fit to be spoken of on the air, so.
Yeah, I can agree.
Yeah. Okay, next up we got TempleCon on February 5th to the 8th in Warwick, Rhode Island. So that's a 4-day event filled with awesomeness.
It's our 10th year.
10th year. You want to see people in costume, steampunk themed. It's amazing. There's all kinds of classes classes.
Workshops
and stuff, right?
Seminars.
So costume making to hairdressing for the, you know,
wine tasting
stuff, wine tasting, scotch tasting, beer tasting.
Yep.
This is my favorite con.
Local history, like 2 years ago, they had one about the local pirates.
Cool. And on top of it all, of course, you have your gaming. So cool minis there. I don't know if Hawk War Games is there. On the Lamb has been there in the past.
Privateer
Press.
As a giant.
Mercs guys are there.
Pulp Monster will be there. They will be previewing for the first time the new edition of Pulp City.
Oh, I'll be trying that out. Yeah. Excellent. And I know the D6G guys show up and do stuff too, usually on Saturday night or whatever. It's a great, great event. Lots of fun. And this year, extra special. A tournament being run by none other than Dan.
Dun, dun, dun.
So it's a Drop Zone Commander.
Absolutely. So this is my has grown to be my favorite minis game. I've been dabbling with all kinds of minis games. I try to try everything that we actually sell in the store. And
that's a lot of mini games.
Yeah, exactly. And this one caught me. It's a 10 mil scale game. Very small infantry, but the vehicles, and that's what the game is about. It's about the vehicles. The detail is absolutely amazing. The game plays out with some interactivity, like in Infinity, if you have played, where you can interrupt movement, but it's only aerial movement. You can like shoot down
planes. Yeah, you have anti-air runs. Yeah, interrupt travel.
And it has a Warhammer-esque strength and toughness. So if you're familiar with Warhammer, you can very quickly adapt to that. And it's fast. Things get
Die quick. The game. Things die. And the thing is, it's about the vehicles. It's about the dropships redeploying units quickly on the battlefield because of small scale, right? Moving stuff, if you had to move from one side of the battlefield to the other, like by driving, it would take forever, or foot slogging, it would take forever. So you need those dropships. But I think the important thing is that dropships and tanks do stuff, but infantry also does stuff, because only infantry can hold buildings.
Exactly. So if infantry are not in their dropship or not in a building, they are literally papier-mâché. They will die horribly.
But you need to preserve them.
But you absolutely need to preserve them, because that's the only way you can really score in the game. So objectives are usually in a building or searchable in a building. And that's also the only place where close combat can happen. So there's no real close combat in the game until two opposing infantry.
Yeah, CQB, right? So close quarters fighting
Get into a building. So that's what caught me, is that the extreme mobility of the game, quickness of the game, and a very, very different objective concept in the game. There's also cards that you can play as instants in the game to...
They interrupt. It's like command stuff, isn't it?
Command stuff. So, like, increase your shooting this round, or get an extra thing, or create a tunnel between two buildings for your infantry to move. So, really interesting stuff like that. And, of course, there's the... I have an espionage card that stops your card. So, there's that aspect of the game. There's command and control of the game. You have a commander that affects your game. So, what a great miniatures game. And we did know that, did find out that Hawk War Games is not going to be at TempleCon, so we took it on ourselves to run our own event. So, we'll see how that goes. Paul's already coming. It looks like Paul's already
coming. Yeah, I'll be there. I'll support the Dan.
Yeah, and it's been interesting already, just dealing with TempleCon. It's been pretty easy, so... Look forward to that.
A bunch of good people that run it, and I don't know if Hawk was there last year, because I didn't make it last year, but I know they were there the year before, and I think the two, no, just the one previous year, yeah, so they were there 2 years ago. I don't know if they made it last year. You were there, Antoine, did you see them?
I don't remember seeing them last year.
Oh, okay.
But I remember them having a presence, but I don't know if it was the team.
Oh, no, it was, what's that girl's name? She used to do the demos for Cool Mini. Mm-hmm. You know what?
Anna,
yeah. She's from Seattle or something. Yep. She's West Coast, yeah.
I don't remember if she was alone or with the team. Because I remember where they were, but I don't know if it was the UK team or not.
I remember seeing a picture of her on the website wearing the drop zone, the Hawk War Game shirt. And I know 2 years ago when I was there, she was doing Cool Mini stuff still, so that must have been from last year. So.
Okay, yes.
Perfect. All right.
So just a quick details on that. It's going to be 1,000 points, 3 rounds, and we are giving away a starter army of the Resistance.
Ooh.
So and it's free entry. So we're really pushing this. We'll see what happens. We're getting some good feedback from the online community, and we'll see how that goes.
Awesome. Do you have any signups yet? Do you know?
You
don't get that information?
It's not interactive. That's the one thing.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's not interactive. I don't know. But I know that there's at least two, me and you.
So. Okay, awesome.
We'll see how that goes.
Okay. What else we got here? Oh, last but not least.
Last but not least, and they open 7, March 7 and 8. So Fantasy is full. Today they mentioned that they had 2 opening, but they might be already filled up.
Yeah, because they had a waiting list too. So yes.
40K, they still have place, and War Machine and Ords also.
Okay, and that also coincides with Metzger Fontaine's and
Norton Defender painting contest.
Right, the premier painting contest in Eastern Canada.
Oh yes,
boom boom boom.
So it's an open format, like we, if you go back to episodes, I think two or three, we had Mathieu on the show, and he went all in with the details about the format and what they have. And something that was added lately, Jean Graton, if I remember correctly, OBS for 30 years, he's going to be there on Sunday to give a master to give a class about miniature photography.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And that's a $15 entry fee for as many models you like to enter.
Yeah, you enter a display, so you make like a group of your models, and you will be judged for the best piece overall in the display.
Right.
Like a diorama?
No, not a diorama. So you could show like 10 different models. Let's say you put them on a, you know, like Matt explained, it's like a box. Let's say you put a box and you put a piece of felt over it and you have 6 or 7 models displayed on it. They'll go look at the models. They'll pick the best model. And that's what they'll judge you on. And it's not like a first, second, third. It's an open format. So
if they'll go, okay, this model is gold, you'll get a gold, but more than one people could get a gold.
So, you know, if you're a bronze, you'll be grouped with other painters of similar skill. So it's not about first, second, third. It's just about kind of seeing
graduation,
where
you
sit,
what your level is. Yeah.
And then meeting people who, other people who are interested in the hobby, who are interested in the painting aspect. And, you know, getting to talk to some really, really good painters. I mean, getting to speak to Mathieu Fontaine is interesting enough. But I know, and I forget his family, Terry will be there for sure. Or Thierry?
Thierry, you see.
Pronouncing that name in English is a pain because it doesn't really exist.
Thierry,
yeah. And he's, of course, a very well-known painter as well. And he painted for Rackham, I believe.
I think so.
Back in the day, the inventors are people who did non-metallic metal for the first time in miniature hobby, right? So it should be a very cool event. And you'll get to speak to Guillaume Lamechen, who will be there.
Yes. And no, he won't be there.
Oh, no, that's right. He can't. He can't make it.
Yeah.
Are you going to be there?
No, that's my wife's due date.
Just skip the birth weekend. Thing. I mean, come on. So. you've already been to one. It's all the same. No, yeah, I know. It doesn't work that way. Okay, so you won't get to meet anyone from this podcast. Steve. Steve will be there.
If she deliver early, early a lot, I might try to go one day. But even then, I'm not sure.
I'll tell you what. You can go to the show, and I'll go and pretend to be you. She'll never notice the difference. Sure. I can go fetch stuff and take care of Theo and take care of a baby. I've got like, experience. It's no problem. Yeah, it's teamwork. This podcast is all about teamwork. Okay, so I think that wraps up our upcoming events. So we're going to go right into fan mail.
I just want to mention before that our OnePlus Armor friends, or foes if you ask Paul.
They had, foes now after what I said about them, yeah.
They had another tournament also planned, but it's already full.
Good for them.
Yeah, so if you go...
They need the practice.
On the Game Summit front, we might add a link. They might have new place or place opening or a list available. It's the... end of the February. So we'll add details in the show notes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Antoine was well prepared for that.
No.
But we'll put the information in the show notes.
In case they open a waiting list.
Okay, perfect. And awesome guys. I talk a lot of smack about them. I've never even met them.
We met them at...
for 5 minutes. I mean... But I watched them play because I was the ringer at that event. They seem super chill. We talked to them back and forth in our little Facebook chat. And they're awesome going along with this whole, like, made-up rivalry. It's pretty great. So looking forward to actually having the Battle of the Casts when we get to it. That should be awesome. I think I may put some prize support in it. From the cave. Free Fantasy Army to the winning team. And if I win it back, well, whatever.
Something we could do. We could put all... I'll put something in so I could try to lure them into other games.
Oh, you sneaky bastard. I like it. All right. So, are we going on to questions now?
Yep.
Okay. So, we've got one fan question from the one fan that sends us questions. Mike Der Spieler.
Mike is awesome.
Mike is awesome. He sends us questions all the time, and they're usually very interesting questions. So, his new question is, do you think that 3D printing will hurt or help the wargaming hobby? Okay. I'll start this off. So, I think it'll definitely change. Now, I think it's already helped wargaming. Because if you look at what we're seeing from companies, I think probably the first mainstream company to use 3D printing was Spartan. a lot of their stuff was 3D printed, and you could actually tell because the texture on the model. Like,
yep.
So 3D printing really helps people bring a project to reality quickly because they don't have to look for a casting person, like or a sculptor, or not a sculptor. I don't know.
3D sculpting is faster.
3D sculpting is faster. The process, right, to get from sculpting. A master, you know, a green to a master to create molds it's a lot faster, right? And I think it's really helping small companies develop product lines quickly, and it could be a good thing. You know, the downside, of course, everyone's talking about copying, and, you know, that's what GW's, you know, they've talked about in some GW press releases and stuff, how they don't see it being a problem because it'll never be mainstream enough. Well, sad news, it's already mainstream. At CES, they were showing all kinds of 3D printing stuff and what you can do, and it is crazy. And these things are getting cheaper all the time. I mean, even Dremel, you know, the guys that make the rotary tools, have a 3D printer you can buy.
And I just saw I can't remember the name of it, but it's a 3D scanner, and it's extremely affordable. So they even have it on sale now at $300.
Yeah.
3D scanner imports whatever you want.
Yeah, it's just essentially a bunch of cameras.
Right. It's one camera with laser,
yeah.
And it's rotating.
Yeah.
But it's very, very cool. Affordable to the extreme hobbyist to collector.
Yeah, how much does a 40K Army cost? If you can afford a 40K Army, you can afford a 3D scanner and a 3D printer, right?
So, it's happening.
But I think what's going to happen, what we'll see eventually, as these become more mainstream, you will maybe see companies selling models, like selling the 3D files,
yeah.
Right? And ultimately, I don't think that'll hurt them. Because if you look at the cost of producing a model, it's not just the sculpting and production. It's what kills most companies is transport.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Most of the cost incurred for these companies producing a physical product is the transport cost to get the product to their customers. And I think that's why a lot of people who do Kickstarters end up shooting themselves in the foot. Not because they don't factor in the production costs or the material costs, but because they don't think about how much it's going to cost to get that crate of 300 miniatures that they gave away to their customer. So I think we'll see companies transition to selling files and people buying those files and printing models. Will there be sharing? There'll be a DRM. People will find a way around it. But ultimately, I like to think that gamers are good people and will pay. You know, the people who are going to pay for the models will be the ones that pay for the models. The people who don't pay for models want to pirate it are the same people who order 40K from China in large quantities because they never want to support a local gaming store and they don't care about anything except themselves.
Rule books on PDFs.
And I don't, you know, that gamer's there already. Exactly. He's not going to change. I open the floor. Go.
Well, I think you're going to have the geek. It's going to start off with the geeks who want to do their own thing, and they're going to print their own thing, and it'll be fine. I mean, there's people who assemble their own models, right? They foam core and
scratch build their own
models. I see it all the time. I see it on prominent hobby sites, right?
Well, one of your employees is a huge scratch built guy. Right? He loves his little tank things that he's made.
So I mean, it's no matter what the geek in the hobbyist will get it. We'll do it. We'll have fun with it. To mass produce it, I think the biggest advantage of the larger companies who have now a foothold in the miniature market is that they know how to market their product. They know how to push their product. They know how to promote their product. So will the 3D printing on the side be... I don't think like it's going to hurt the business. Right?
It depends also how much... how cheap the materials come to be.
Well, materials are cheap. Like, good quality plastic for 3D printers is cheap. There's a gaming group going on next door, so we just heard that shouting. That's someone getting killed or someone surviving. One of the two. So the production, the cost to produce them is cheap because the materials are cheap. There's a time factor, though, because at the moment, 3D printers are relatively slow.
Mm-hmm.
So it may take you a day to print a model.
Right, and the geek will do it. He'll day by day.
But he'll do it because it's geeky.
Right, exactly.
Not necessarily because of the price advantage, right?
Because it's a challenge.
And right now, the material might be cheap, but you still have the overhead of buying the printer.
Yeah, well, even that's so relatively cheap, right?
It's not cost-effective right now. It might be more as it goes.
In a year or so, yeah.
And the technical 3D use, like you have to be able to find the appropriate if you're not scanning it, if you have to find the appropriate files, you have to import them, you have to convert them, or whatever is going to be needed to do. So
yeah, there'll be some technical hurdles.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as long as it's not mainstream, I don't think it's a problem for the companies. Once it gets really mainstream, then they'll have to change their
strategy.
Their strategy.
Well, I think like, yeah,
they might have to go to, like you said, files, and maybe going on the way of. Like, some companies right now are making money on the models and giving out the rules. They might have to switch that. They start charging for the rules and providing files for the models.
Thing is, the reason... I don't know if that'll ever work, because the reason that giving the rules away for free and selling the models works is because you only buy the rules once, but you keep buying models. If you tried to do it that way, the book would have to be $300, right?
Unless they keep changing the game every 2 years.
Are we talking about a particular company, Dan?
I don't know.
I don't know. Would you buy a $100 rulebook every 3 years or 2 years? Apparently, because that's... of course, if you look at recent financials... anyway, that's a topic for another day. So anything else to add, guys? I mean, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah, I think also one thing about it is the quality. Cheap, you can get a 3D printer cheap, but they don't have the details.
They're not as fine.
Yeah.
They're not as
good. We see the layering.
So if you just want to play, it's not a problem. But for people who are in for the painting, the hobbying part, it might be longer before they start to move to that.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest. 3D printers that we have now, you can get some really high-resolution stuff for relatively cheap. It's kind of scary. The printers are there. A lot of it is the material. Because if you buy the ultra-cheap plastic to put in them, it doesn't produce the same results.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think we'll get to a point where you're going to spend $300 and get a super high-resolution 3D printer, or less even. Because the thing is, you don't need a big production scale, right? You don't need something that produces a large object. We're talking 28, 30 millimeter figures. So you don't need a big 3D printer to print it. So I think you'll be able to get high resolution, smaller 3D printers to do that at that, you know, at a price point that's reasonable, if not attractive. Yeah, I just don't see it really hurting us anytime in the near future. I think hobbyists will spend money anyway, because that's what hobbyists do.
Yeah.
We're such whores. Okay, well, Mike, let us know if we didn't cover anything that you wanted to hear on that topic. I think we pretty much covered every angle, but you know, it's always possible we missed something. And yeah, from that, I guess we'll go on into news, and I will I'll lead the pack. So I've got a couple picks today, both Kickstarters. So one is the Lord of Fury Kickstarter, which is by Titanforge, and basically it's a new game, kind of looks or sounds like Space Marines versus Chaos Demons, but with a not using Space Marines or Chaos Demons in the name. They've got some preview shots up, some 3D renders of the models. They have an awesome Not Bloodthirster that's coming out. It's just a giant demon thing with horns, an axe, and a whip.
They're a proxy company right now. That's all they do, proxy...
No.
Unofficially, they're
releasing
doing...
rules. There's going to be a game.
That's new because all their fantasy, Warhammer fantasy, not Warhammer fantasy armies, don't have rules. So the rule part is new.
I've got to find the name because it made me laugh when I read what the game was, the description of the game where it describes the two armies. I nearly choked. And it is. The X-Terra Space Force. I laughed just saying it. And the, versus the Lords from the Demonic Kingdom and their legions.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. So, hokey and obvious ripoff all at the same time. So, aside from that, I have the, and I'm going to mispronounce this probably because it's an odd word. Ater Kickstarter. A-T-E-R. So, I forgot to mention, Lords of Fury is January 23rd. The Aether Kickstarter is ongoing and ends February 2nd, and this is for a collectible set of miniatures, 54mm scale. They're kind of a weird, maybe, almost Evangelion-style, strange-looking things, and like they're the models are really original. I think they're pretty cool. Price is very reasonable for what you get. They just look like odd sci-fi stuff. Be fun to paint.
Yep, interesting for painters.
Yeah, and I say Evangelion, because if you ever saw Evangelion, you know, the angels all look kind of weird and different. That type of strange, creepy sci-fi. So I thought it was pretty awesome. And that's ongoing now. What you got, Antoine?
First, Privateer Press released their Steamroller and other organized play format for 2015 this week. That's something we might go over more in details in a future episode. So you can go and download. They're used for most of tournaments run for War Machine and Horde. So it's interesting. They have interesting change compared to the previous year. At least in the Steamroller one. They have also the Hardcore and the Master format, which are more specialized format for War Machine, while the Steamroller is the basic tournament format.
And they're more geared towards Masters and Hardcore players, right? The names are pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hardcore is truly Hardcore, and the Masters is more advanced level of play than regular Steamroller. So it's nice the way they've done it. There's three tiers, you know. Steamroller is kind of casual tournament.
They have a fourth tier, but it's running from June to June, so it's still the same rules as last year, which is the Iron Gauntlet, which is the real master player, but they already have a format called Master. So those can be downloaded right now. After that, Torg Gaming will produce Relics. Are moving their production to resin and also are starting to use 3D sculpting instead of the... Speaking of 3D printing, they're starting to use 3D sculpting instead of the traditional sculpting they have been using for a while. They've previewed the first three units using that.
I saw the Heavy Dragoon.
Which are the Britannon Heavy Dragoons, the Vitir Vicarios, and the Nuem Praefectus Equitum. So those three units, we'll link them in the show notes. They're nice. They're going to be released by the end of January, if I'm mistaken. So that's a change for the company, and they are releasing quicker than before with the 3D sculpting, I think. So
maybe all our plugging of Relics is finally paying off.
Maybe.
That's our mandatory once an episode plug, right?
Yeah,
that's the way we do it.
They have... They are now, they upped the personnel in the company. So now, before it was only the owner who was working, and they now have a community manager, and I don't remember the name, but someone who managed all the events and shows and stuff like that. So it's growing quickly in the UK. So they had a small Facebook group, and that thing exploded lately. So
it's a cool little game.
The game is growing and it's fun. So I can't wait to get all those new items.
Yeah, I looked at those the Heavy Dragoons just for fun. I didn't actually see the Vitir though, so I'm trying to get it to load, but the page won't load for me. So I guess I'll just have to wait. All right,
and that's it for my picks.
Awesome, Dan. Do you have any interesting news items you'd like to discuss?
Sure. There's been Fantasy Flight came out with X-Wing, and at Gen Con they announced Armada.
Right?
X-Wing is huge, huge game. Board game style dogfighting. So it originally came from a concept called Wings of War, right? And there's previous versions of that as well, where you were hiding your maneuver and then
pre-plotted movement,
and then you'd reveal that and then do an action and whatnot. So the X-Wing has been licensed out to other companies as well. The flight system, the
flight path,
right? Has been licensed out to other companies, so it was Kits, who did Star Trek and now Dungeons & Dragons. But, and they've been extremely slow yet high quality, they've been coming out with very slow but high quality models for their game, Fantasy Flight. And around the corner is the Imperial Raider, which just looks absolutely gorgeous. It's the equivalent of the Corvette that came out a few months ago.
Yeah, it looks like a mini Star Destroyer.
Mini Star Destroyer with kind of like X-Wing, TIE Fighter advanced wings on the side kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it actually comes with the TIE Advanced.
Yes.
And it comes with the upgrades to the TIE Advanced that actually make them useful. Because right now they're the weakest model in the game.
So just a beautiful looking model. Absolutely beautiful looking model.
And I think they announced a new one this week for their mercenary faction, whatever it's called.
It's called Most Wanted. It's basically, it's coming out with reiterated ships like the Y-Wing, but it's a scum and villainy faction. So yeah. That's interesting. But around the corner is Armada. Now, it was announced at Gen Con. I don't know if you guys...
yeah, we saw it. We didn't get a chance to try it.
Didn't try it, but I watched the demos online, and this looks really, really awesome.
Yeah, so you have your squadrons I'm totally down fighters. For that. Consider this a pre-order, Dan.
And it's amazing how much grip these guys have on...
well, it's Star Wars.
Exactly. On the,
that's all you need to say.
They've had the license for a while, but they're doing something really, really cool with it.
Yeah.
So, really interesting stuff to look around the corner with the Armada and the massive release of ships that will be coming out with that in the near future. The other interesting thing, which I've been debating about bringing in, because as we are kind of an all-you-can-eat miniature store, is the Knight models. And I wanted to get some kind of feedback on the community on...
The Batman.
Yeah, the Batman, game. Exactly.
Batman, they do Marvel as well. Yeah.
They don't have the game with the Marvels one.
No.
Not yet.
This one actually has a game associated to it. Yeah. Models are larger, Inquisitor style, I guess?
No, they have larger ones for collector papers.
Like for display or whatever? Right.
But the gaming is 35mm.
Okay. Yeah.
So
a little bigger than War Machine Hordes, which are like 32 heroic scale.
Yeah, but they're at the Manifold scale or the Wild West Exodus.
Yeah, so exactly. Models, Wild West Exodus is a great comparison for size.
Models look good. I mean, obviously, the
models look amazing. Look
fantastic.
Yes, but they're also painted really well, so.
I'm Batman.
I've been debating whether or not to bring that in, and then we'll see how that goes, but.
I'm sure those will sell. They would sell.
And I think they'll sell to people just one for collectors.
Collectors, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't. Well, and again, you didn't ask my opinion, but I'll give it to you anyway. this type of thing, I would probably bring in a small selection, see how they go. I mean, if you stick to, like, the Batman, the Catwoman, the Joker, stuff like that, that'll go.
The female Joker?
Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn.
So, yeah, you do stuff like that, and that'll go. And then maybe that'll help you gauge interest.
Right.
And they have some starters for the gang, if you want to get the game into.
Right.
So just a couple of starters and a book or two.
Yeah.
And some models for the painters.
I mean, I'd take some. Not that that means anything.
Exactly, take anything.
I need new wing on the house soon.
So that's coming up. And Knight models are out, but they're releasing very quickly a lot of stuff. So.
I think it's a new revision of the game coming, right? Or it's either... I seem to recall reading that they have a revised rule set coming for the Batman game. And it just launched, or it's coming very soon, but there's something new on the horizon for that.
Yeah, well, I think they launched the models before the game. So.
Well, there is an existing game already, and they've been releasing models for the last while, but I think there's a revised version of the game coming out. It's supposed to be more streamlined. Anyway.
So that's me.
Awesome. All right, so let's take a little break. And then we'll come back and do our main topic, the interview. You're back, geeks. And we're back. Okay, so now we're going to do our main topic. We got Mr. Dan here. And as Antoine eloquently put it in the show notes, interview with a game store owner by Paul and Rice Filio. Antoine thinks he's clever. I'll show him.
Anyway. No.
Okay, so Dan, why a gaming store?
Why a gaming store?
Yeah, so this is actually your second gaming store,
yep.
Right? You did another gaming store before, and you had a partner, and you know, you guys, one wanted to close, one wanted to stay open, so you decided to keep the store open, you redeveloped it. And that's an interesting choice. Most people I know who have a gaming store regret that decision. So, no, I think it's cool that you chose to do this a second time. That shows dedication, right? And, you know, you revamped the store, kind of made it your own, did your own thing. And that changed dramatically from Gamer's World to Gamer's Vault.
Trying something new, yeah.
You know. So how did you get into the original gaming store? Like, what brought that on? And then what made you decide to reopen and reinvest and reinvent?
Yeah, well, let me start with a childhood story. I maybe 12, 13 years old. I spent many summers in Italy in the mountains in the middle of nowhere.
This sounds like a story my dad would tell you. Back in my day, there was hills both ways, uphill, like, and
they were snow. They're cooking with wooden stoves, and there's chickens flying around the place, and this is like a total rural suburban area in Italy in the 80s. And all I had was a warm little fire and some Dungeons & Dragons books. I was totally into Dungeons & Dragons. It was amazing. It was such a cool concept of fantasy, a getaway. I've been trying to get away with fantasy all my life. And what a beautiful little story. And I was reading, and I was 12, 13 years old. It was amazing. Making up dungeons and stuff like that. And like I once went into a, maybe it was a bookstore / gaming store, and I just saw a whole slew of D&D books. I only had the Player's Handbook and photocopies of the Dungeon Master Guide at the time, and I said, one day I want to own all of that. And you know what? It kind of, in a certain way, came true. I was approached by an old friend of mine, and he had the idea, and I'm self-employed. I have some extra time on the side. Looking to put some money somewhere. What do we do? So the first idea was to try something, and we absolutely didn't know what we were doing or getting into. We had a business plan, we had the ideas, but we were both role players. We were part of the same role playing group, and we were video gamers. We didn't know anything about. Well, I mean, I had dabbled in miniature gaming. Never even, like, I bought myself a Portal Magic the Gathering starter by that point, but I had no idea. We both had no idea about the TCGs, the miniatures. And wow, it was, what an experience of starting something and then just it's skewing in a certain direction. We started with Privateer Press.
You guys were the only place to do Privateer Press.
We started with Privateer Press. It was the basics. It was Mark I black and white rule books. And wow, it took off. We were trying to hold six of each model on the shelf to keep our stock.
And I remember buying back in those days, and it was crazy because no other store really wanted to do it because everyone was so locked into GW at the time. Donjon had tried carrying some starters, but the owner was against the whole idea because he didn't want to dilute his inventory. Warhammer, right? And I remember coming here, and you had the wall at the front on the right hand side from where I'm sitting that was all full of miniatures, and it was just, it was packed.
Right.
It was just, you know, not enough wall space for the amount of models that were jammed in there, and it was insane to try to find stuff, and there was always people at, like, you can never go in there and go, oh, I'm gonna grab some models by myself. There was always three other guys trying to, like, climb over you to get to stuff.
So, it evolved, because we had really focused on the video game aspect at first, and it did take off. The video games.
Well, you had Land Center.
Yeah,
right?
We had lineups going out the door for the video gaming. And so the concept works, but as most small shop owners, you're the employee, you're doing everything, right? So it grew from there, and we started getting employees, and it came to the point where basically we had different ideas, and my partners wanted to move to a different location, so we couldn't come up to an agreement, and it comes out down to starting something new. Wanted to start something new in my own way, more fresh ideas. So comes the Second Store Gamers Vault, and we did it on a concept of a place to play, a place to come and play and focus on that idea. And we started minimal stock and then grew it and noticed that as a retail store, you have to have stock. You can't just rely on...
We had that discussion, right?
Yeah.
I remember an argument over a can of primer.
A can of primer. Dan, why don't you have primer in stock? Special order it. Come on. I'll get it for you next week.
Yeah. It was funny.
So we just grew our inventory from there, and that's, I think, been the biggest increase to the store is knowing what to have in stock.
And you guys dabble in everything, right?
Absolutely. So jack of all trades, master of some. Video game. We have 20 LAN stations. We have lots and lots of gaming. Like, we are currently in a room. There's a massive Dungeons & Dragons role-playing group next to us. There's about six tables of miniature gamers going on at the same time. And there's still place to play. There's still place to find a table and play. So that's the idea of the concept of you can come here and you can find a spot and you can have fun, even if there's a podcast rolling in the background.
That's right.
So, I think the biggest incentive was I was already on my own as a IT consultant, and which gave the concept that you're an entrepreneur already and you're trying something new, and so that was the start. What kind of gamer was I before? Listen, like most people, I shopped online, I eBayed. I went to the local gaming stores. I spent lots and lots of time there, and I just wanted to do my own thing.
So, how did you guys pick this location for your store?
Yep. So, what are the key considerations? What are the key considerations before you open a store? And what does everybody say? Location. I really think that's almost, it's extremely important, but it's not the key concept.
Well, I think, especially in niche product stores, right?
Yep.
Because you're a destination. It's not like a store in a mall.
You're not a walk-in.
Where people are going, I need to buy shoes, I'm going to walk around the mall and look for shoes, right?
Yeah.
Gamers are used to having to travel to find their stuff.
Right.
So it's... You need to be, in my opinion, you know, you're the expert, you need to be located somewhere that's convenient enough to get to. But, I mean, we've seen stores open up, like, in basements under metro stations.
Right, because that's extreme niche, right? They're focused
on... And people travel there, right?
So the idea is, well, what kind of store do you want to be? And you're absolutely right. There are different types of stores. And I think that's one of the biggest concepts of a game store is that every single store... has its own culture and its own idea of what it wants to do. So if you are waiting for the mom and her son to walk in to buy a paraphernalia of a comic book or of a Transformer, that could be the kind of gaming store you want to be. You could be in a mall, you could be on the side of a busy street, or you could be the guy that has every single expansion to some of the big popular games. And so the first question is what kind of gaming store you want to be, and then that dictates
your location.
The location.
I know one of your big advantages here is the kind of the open, bright, not a dungeon.
That was our first. Now, after 5 years, there's wear and tear. We did some repainting recently, and we did some little upgrades, but definitely our original revamp concept was, let's keep it bright, let's keep it clean, let's keep it family-friendly, a place where I don't mind leaving my 15-year-old, 13-year-old son here to play Magic with some 25, 30-year-olds, right? So the idea is to be as friendly as possible to the community and a bright, bright, nice place to play.
And clean, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's cliche, but gamer funk is a real thing. So, you know, AC...
AC, has three cans of Axe to walk around with. Ventilation, absolutely. Ventilation. Key considerations to opening up a game store, time. You absolutely need the time. I tell myself I only spend 30, 40 hours here a week, but it's probably a lot more because I'm... Well, what are you doing at home?
Only 30, 40 hours. That's a full-time job.
Yeah,
that's on top of your other full-time job, right?
On top of your other full-time job. But I mean, what am I doing at night? I'm doing posts on Facebook. What am I doing first thing in the morning? I'm checking the cash flow.
You're recording podcasts.
I'm recording podcasts, you know? So time is huge, and being self-employed helps me do that. Or, you know, and the third thing for me is support. Support from your family, support from your friends, support from your buddies.
I support you, Dan.
Support, like, I can't imagine constantly being shot down when you're trying to start your own thing, because it might not be a mainstream idea, you know?
Why aren't you a lawyer? Why aren't you a doctor?
You know, trying something you're passionate about.
Dan would be an awesome lawyer. I'm just trying to imagine Dan in court, like, super serious courtroom.
Now, allegedly. So, support is super important. And, of course, investment capital. You need the money.
Yeah, and a lot of people, and I know it's not actually in our show notes, and that's not one of the things we talked about, but a lot of people don't realize inventory cost for a gaming store. I did the math at one point. I mean, we've talked about me investing here, and you know, and I've looked at opening a store myself, and I know Antoine's also looked at opening a store. And it's easy to spend $100K in inventory and not realize it.
Yep, like, absolutely.
And people don't understand. They don't realize there's $100K in inventory. Yeah, we think about, okay, so $100K, it's impossible. Well, not really. What's the average cost of a model?
Right.
You know, $20 a model, okay. Let's say it's $15 cost. How many models? Oh, you know, probably 500-600 different models on the wall, if not more. Oh, magic cards. Well, you've got to have stuff to trade. You've got to have sets. You've got to break open packs for your store. That all takes money.
Yep. And then the fixtures and the renovations.
And that's not even counting your leasehold improvements and maintenance on the, you know, a lot of rentals, I don't know about here, but in a lot of rentals, you have to maintain your AC unit. Absolutely. For your building. You have to, so there's costs. There's costs involved.
So startup is important. A plan is super important.
Yeah. And I think, that hits the nail on the head. Because one of the reasons that a lot of gaming stores fail is because they are started by super enthusiastic gamers who have no idea where they're going. And then they run out of money, and that's the end of it.
Yep.
Right? didn't plan, and it's gone, yeah, and so they don't know what happened.
The business plan, and there's so much out there to help you. It's pretty impressive how much information is out there to help you do this. It's really just about spending the time and sitting down and focusing on it and coming up with a plan. Now, you're not going to, you can have a plan of a budget of a year from now, but obviously things are going to change and things are going to evolve. It is an organic thing. It's going to be dynamic. You have to respond to your customers' needs. So, but having a plan to fall back on this is absolutely important. Culture. What kind of culture you want to try and bring out in a store, you know? Is it going to be, I'm selling you something and I'm closing down at 6 o'clock, or am I opening up a...
Am I open till 10 or 11 so you can play here?
So you can play here, and then the guys are staying after hours and, you know, and developing that community.
A bunch of old guys that you have to give keys to because they won't leave because they're painting all night.
Right. and now it comes down to your original question, location. So for us, public transport, we're in town. Public transport's absolutely the key. There's always a trade-off between public transport and parking for your...
Yeah. Well, in town, right? Right? Parking's always going to be problematic.
So that's always a consideration. Demographic, the first thing we did when we were looking at locations was what kind of schools are nearby. Are we going to have our demographic to play the video for the video gamers, for the Yu-Gi-Oh players, you know? How many schools? Are they universities? Are there maybe some guys with some disposable income, right? And in terms of continuity from one store to the other, my biggest question was, am I going to move from the location I was at before? What kind of continuity do I have? And to tell you the truth, I don't think it really mattered because the culture completely changed from one store to another.
Definitely. Definitely the environment here and the people that come here are very different than what I used to encounter at the old store.
Right.
And I know you were big. When you closed Gamers World and you reopened Gamers Vault, you rushed to get Vault open because I think there was a concern there that you were going to lose some of that client base and you wanted to make sure you didn't do it. And in the end, do you feel...
It was pretty much irrelevant. A new culture established, a new communities established, new games came in, right? Yeah. So it was very, very different. And the revamp was a breath of fresh air. So.
Yeah. And that's right. You reopened like when we started seeing the next new wave of miniature games. So
right.
For years we had GW, and then we had Privateer Press.
The Flames of War. Flames of War was...
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So you had Privateer Press was the next big one, and then you had this explosion, right? Flames of War, Malifaux, we talked about Mercs, all kinds of stuff started coming, Infinity. All the Spartan games, yeah, the Dystopian Wars.
There was the rise and fall of AT-43, and then...
well, Rackham in general, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So, but there was like this... The golden age of gaming had just started.
Yeah.
So there was all kinds of new stuff to bring people in.
I remember playing Uncharted Seas before in the old store. Right.
I think you were only closed about a month and a half, weren't you?
Exactly. It was exactly that, a month and 12 days. So the motto was step out of the world and into the vault.
Yeah.
That was the little catch line. So, and then it came to that, the playing space. And so during the revamp, we said we want to give the gamers the elite playing space and a place to come by. And that's what we really grew and focused the new store on.
And there was some experimentation there, right? I know you tried different concepts for playing space. You tried, I hate to say pay to play, because that's what it was, but that has a negative, that's not really what you weren't doing it to try to make money. It was more of a help us maintain the playing space.
Absolutely.
And it was a nominal fee. I think it was $2 levels. A day or something, right?
It was $2 for the regular gaming space. And then if you had a membership or you wanted just to rent out, we had private rooms in the back, one of which we are in now. And it's a nice, cozy place, especially if you're role-playing, to have away from the some maybe louder, rowdier gamers. A great spot to just have a focused little game out. Now, you have to consider, like, the real estate. So, if people don't want to pay to play,
how do you monitor your business? First and foremost,
exactly.
So you have to monetize every square foot. Otherwise, you're paying rent on floor space that's not generating your revenue.
Right. So, the concept came down to, well, our pay-to-play isn't necessarily working as well as we want to. Let's try and sublet some of that space to a comic book store. So we tried to bring in the Fourth Wall at the time. And when we did that, we noticed, whoa, a huge loss of community there because the people had less space to play. And when you have a loss of community, you have loss of people coming into the store.
A loss of foot traffic, which loss of revenue.
Loss of revenue. So the gaming space is almost in any gaming store that is focused and is niched out to, like for us, miniature gaming, you absolutely need the gaming space. And more from that, you need the events that'll bring the people in.
Yeah, organized play, right?
Organized play.
Yeah, because the miniatures, while they will sell themselves to a certain extent, gaming stores have one of the unique privilege of being able to generate traffic for themselves to help their retail sales. Most retail stores, aside from running a sale where you're selling stuff at less profit to generate traffic, you have no way of really bringing customers in. I mean, I work in retail. I run a chain of stores. And I can't say, well, I'm gonna do something today, and a bunch of people are going to come in, and they're going to instantly buy a computer or whatever, because that's what we do. Whereas a gaming store can say, you know what, let's start a league, let's take this game, and let's start a journeyman league or a grow league of some kind, and we'll bring people in, we'll organize events, and while they're here, gamers are impulse shoppers. I know I'm the worst kind of gamer, so they're here, they will buy a miniature. They'll buy paint. They'll buy brushes. They'll, buy other hobby stuff. They'll buy
accessories,
chocolate bars, and rulers, soft drinks, and anything, and you're smart. You're smart. You will sell them anything that they're willing to buy.
That's the idea.
it seems obvious, but a lot of stores aren't like that. And I think you were the first gaming store I saw in Montreal that sold soft drinks and had an array of chocolate bars at the cash because, like, gamers are fat for a reason. They like calories. Let's give them calories. You know?
We actually tried the veggie chips for a while.
I remember that. Bars. I remember the evil ice cream fridge at the front. God damn it.
Wow.
You know? But it works.
Yeah.
And it's add-on sales, right? Every dollar counts. And it's amazing how fast here, those dollars add up. You know, if you've got 100 people over the course of the weekend, and 50 of them buy chocolate bars or whatever, well, okay, you might make $50. $50 pays an employee at minimum wage for 5 hours. That's a big deal.
Big deal. Yeah. And it really ended up being the more events we can run, the more leagues and organized play we can do, the more sales we would generate. So it's really all about that. And then comes the conventions and things like that, where you have a massive amount of
traffic, right?
Traffic and exposure. And we were running game rooms this last year.
And it's not only traffic, it's 100% targeted marketing, right?
Exactly.
It's generating traffic is great, but generating traffic that's all the right type of customer, that's amazing.
Exactly. So, so that's kind of what you're going to do to identify what kind of store you want to be. Because you could just be the store that just sells the starter games, right? Or board games, or just card games, or just miniature games. And we decided, you know what? You'll have that crossbreed gamer that'll...
Well, like yourself.
Yeah, that'll dabble with many different games. And the more you have, the more the merrier, so...
The more you have, the more you can sell, right?
Yep. So, I think...
Wow, we've gone over a lot of the stuff. So, you know, a lot of hobbyists or hobby gamers have a real disdain for TCGs. It's almost like we look, and I think we all know hobby gamers are like that, right? Where they look at Magic players and stuff like second-class citizens. They're not real gamers. They play Magic. I mean, when Magic
first... Most of them also started with that. They just upgraded, and that's within quotes.
Well, I remember in college, I was president of the gaming club for 5 years in my 2-year program. And, you know, I used to have to fight with the other people in the club who wanted to, like, ban Magic. Like, don't let Magic players play here. Like, well, they're playing a game. You know, half our club at that point suddenly became Magic players. Like, it's like shooting yourself in the foot, right? So, I mean, TCG players, I think, are a major source of revenue for gaming stores.
Yes.
I think they're demanding customers.
So, the TCG market, I mean, you can focus completely, and you'll have the singles. You'll be doing trades. But I still think you need to focus on either a particular game and try and do that TCG well, or you're dabbling and you just have some starters and some boosters here and there, right? And you're not doing the singles. The TCG market, I don't want to say it's a cheap, it's more of a discount market, but you have, and I can count them, I'm seeing them in my head right now, the number of gamers that came in as young kids playing Magic, playing Yu-Gi-Oh, and then, oh, what are they playing over there? That's a really cool miniature game. What's that? And so you have that gamer that's coming in, that school is telling him to get into Magic, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, and they go to find the community, and then they're open to a huge world of gaming. And so we call these the gateway games, whether it's Magic, whether it's the board games, Ticket to Ride, Settlers of Catan, whether it's Warhammer 40K. These are all gateway games to the industry. Wow. And
40K, a gateway game.
Isn't that the gateway game, under quotations.
It's
right?
The gateway to other miniatures games.
Yeah, it's like we all start there.
And, I mean, just look at it. It's one of the first. It's the most well-marketed product. They have a foothold in the industry.
I mean, they have their own retail stores, right?
Right. And so when someone thinks about miniatures, the first thing that'll come into their head is this Warhammer that they've been seeing. And they won't know what it is.
But they've heard of it. Or they may know someone who's played it, yeah.
And so when they go check it out, well, there's this huge other world of miniature gaming and and different styles. And I really don't like to compare something like Warhammer to War Machine, because I really believe it's two completely different styles of play, two different yep. games, and you cannot compare them apples to apples. So these gateway games really open your eye, and as I mentioned earlier when I was playing some of the board games with the family, they're like, wow, well, this is not Monopoly. Oops, I said the M word. But there's a whole other...
Yeah, we have that concept, right? It's the whole North American board game concept. What do you mean? There's no pop-o-matic bubble. I have physical dice to roll?
Right.
There's rules? I don't just run around a board aimlessly?
I find when you immerse yourself in these non-random games like the Euro games, you're looking at a strategy concept that has nothing to do with a random draw and more to do with your decisions.
Smart play.
Right, smart play. So, and it opened my eyes. That's the big thing, is it opened my eyes to see what's out there. And the more I dabbled in it, the more I enjoyed it. And it's a passion. And it comes down to, how do you do this, Dan? Well, you have to have the passion. I can't imagine owning a gaming store without being a gamer. Like, it's inconceivable.
I've seen it. It's not pretty.
Right. So, you have to have the passion. You have to...
Sorry. I just started laughing because I was thinking of your partner, who does not come from a gaming background at all.
Absolutely.
And then when he started seeing this, he found it fascinating.
Yeah.
I walk in, he's glued to StarCraft or something.
His first concept, to his first input, gaming input to me was, let's run a Monopoly tournament. So, you know, and I'm like, okay. But I mean, when you look at the mass market stuff and you see what other world is out there, it's really cool. It's really geeky, and there's a hobby for anybody. It's really amazing.
Yeah, no, it really can be anyone's hobby.
And back to my partner, and he's a businessman, and he's not a gamer, but you know what? He plays StarCraft. He started playing StarCraft here, and he hasn't stopped, so...
I know.
He definitely got hooked on something. And as I said, there's something
to... And he loves to watch the games, right?
Right.
He'll sit there and he'll like, so, explain this to me. Okay.
And so the passion's absolutely important to the operation. You have to have it. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot business-wise. I learned a lot in the industry, dealing with employees.
Retail teaches you a lot about people, I've noticed.
Yeah. And
it builds a...
And you have to, because you're asked, you know, what kind of store are you? And I really believe that we are the customer service, the bartender for a gamer. You know what I mean? And, you know, you're talking about, you're building your decks. We're helping people build their decks. Magic, we're helping people build their armies and miniature games. We're not just there to give you something and get you out the door.
Yeah, you're not just selling stuff.
Exactly.
You sell the experience that goes with it.
And that's something I've always been happy about doing here.
I mean, I've been to a lot of gaming stores over the years. You actually have some of the best staff I've ever seen. Because they're most gaming stores have a magic guy, and they've got a guy that knows the miniatures, and there's very little overlap in a lot of the staff, whereas your guys kind of all dabble in everything.
Well, they have to. They have to be able to answer a question, right? So, if they are the magic guy, which I have a magic guy, I have a miniature guy, they still have to be
able
to answer...
The miniature guy just entered the room, actually. Right.
They still have to be able to know how to answer, well, what colors work well with magic when you want to do some beat sticking or...
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to have a staff that'll be knowledgeable about the products you sell.
And I think you guys do a great job at that. And I mean, and you have a really good staff retention, which a lot of stores don't have either. And you have people who've been here for years who have been involved in the community. Yeah, we've seen some of the people grow up here.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Chris and Guillaume and the other staff. I mean, when I first met Chris, he was like a kid. And, you know, I've seen him grow up, finish university, get married.
Right.
Like, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Gamer culture.
Gamer culture. Yep. Awesome. Okay, so you blew through our show notes. and hold one big long thing, so I didn't even have to ask questions. It was great. So I guess one last thing. So there's that whole big debate, right? So you get a bunch of people and read forums, people talking, and I was reading a forum recently, a local forum in Montreal. Actually, sorry, it was the indie forum, and there's a guy that started like an online e-tail gaming store. And he spends a lot of time basically talking about how he feels that retail brick-and-mortar stores don't do anything for gamers and are just, like, a waste of time and you know, profiteering, which I think is totally wrong. But there's a lot of people who think that, right? And there's this whole e-tail versus retail, who's going to win, you know, mentality. And I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on that.
Sure. And one thing I wanted to mention is that in part of my learning experience, you would go to conventions, we go to retail workshops, and there was a lot to learn. And this is brought up there just as much, and with very key examples. And I want to get back to something. I'll come back to something later, which is the types of gamers that are out there. But it comes down to, remember what I said. What was I doing before I opened a game store? I was buying my games online, man.
Yeah.
Who's not going to buy their games at a discount online? It's going to happen. But hold on a second. Now you have that game. What you going to do? You're going to play it at home. You're going to play it once, maybe twice. What about if you want to find some other people to play with? What if you want to get some other people into the game, right? So where are you going to go? You're going to find a community, and that community is probably at a game store. And the value-added experience that you will get when you purchase something at a game store, you're going to... I witnessed it tonight, right? My employee was helping a couple build their decks, and they just sat there, and then the sale was great at the end of the day. So being able to give that experience to the customer is so important.
Well, it's, you know, we work in IT, right? And there's a category of IT reseller called a VAR, and that's the value-added reseller. And I think that's what gaming stores have to be. You have to differentiate yourself somehow. I think just saying, I'm a gaming store and I'm going to sell stuff, won't work. You have to do something to bring customers in, keep them coming, right? You have to earn their trust, earn their loyalty, and have them go, you know what? It's going to cost me 10% more. You know, so that $20 model will be $22 at the store. But I'm willing to spend that because I get it right away. I get to go see, you know, Dan and Guillaume or whatever, and hang out for a bit. And, you know, it's all part of the experience. So you're paying that $2 extra for the experience.
Yeah. And back to my concept of, there's so many different types of gamers. You have the collector, right? Whether he collects the item online or he's pre-ordering it at your store, he wants every single one of every model that's coming out for that game. And he's going to get it. And if you can give him the experience that, hey, you know what? It's on the side for you, no problem. And and you've given him that experience. And
well, you've made him feel special.
Made him feel special.
But it's true.
You know?
That's your value.
You got that collector gamer. And then you have the dabbler who's going to try something. He's going to try something new every week of the month, or every once a month. He's going to try something new. He's going to look for those. He's looking on the edge of the gaming experience, all those new Kickstarters that are out there. So he's picking up those Kickstarters, but he's also bringing them to your store and getting other people involved and getting the store to maybe get into that game and build a community. So the collector's great. The dabbler is great. The focused gamer he's only playing this one game. He's not going to touch anything else. But you know what? He's buying every model in that particular game, right? Or that particular faction, and that's all he plays. But you know what? He does it right.
But it'll also play at your store, and people will see the game played.
Exactly, right? And then you have, I'll call him the cheapskate, right? He's always looking for a deal. He's always shopping around. But you know what that gives you? The guy who's shopping around is telling you that there's, that your competition is out there and that you have to manage your prices right.
Yeah.
So he's good information to you, whether he's buying from you or not. He's still good information to you. The leader, the gaming leader who has a gamer following and he's your product champion. Those are super important to you too, because they're bringing other people in. The follower, he's following whatever someone else is doing. Oh, this other guy's getting into this other new game. I'm going to follow him too and try that something else new. And the baggage. The guy who will not spend a cent in your store, but if he wasn't there playing with those other guys, the game wouldn't, the group wouldn't be complete. You need him too, man.
The furniture.
The furniture. Follow. You need him too, because the group wouldn't be complete without that guy just being part of the group. So, you know what? Every single type of gamer is good for your store. And I buy online. I buy online for the store. I buy online for me. And I buy for my store, of course. But everybody will. Everybody will buy online. But the experience you'll get from a brick and mortar store is an experience that will engage you.
Well, if it's done right.
If it's done right. Yeah, absolutely. If it's done right. If you can do it right. So you need them all, man. That's my,
awesome.
My 2 cents.
Cool. Antoine, is there anything you think we didn't cover?
Dan covered pretty much every point we had.
Yeah, no, it's maybe he actually read the show notes.
maybe.
Awesome. You know what, Dan? I think it's been insightful, and it's really cool to hear about it from your perspective. You know, because we all talk about, you know, someday I'm going to own a gaming store, and it's every geek's dream, right? So it's kind of cool to hear from someone who's actually done it and get some insight into what it takes and what it's all about.
And likes it and is not jaded about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
yeah, because it's easy to become jaded, right?
Yep.
Because gamers are not easy people to deal with. No retail job is easy. I've been in retail for 20 years. No retail job is easy. But gamers, I find, are an even harder class of customer, because gamers tend to be certain types of people, right? They're either super, like, smart and just annoyingly detail picky, like, aggravating people to deal with, or they're the exact opposite, right? And in either case, that makes it hard from a retail point of view to keep everyone happy and try to serve them and try to maintain a positive outlook. There's very few people I find in our hobby that fall in between. I think it's because it's the type of people we, you know, that tend to gravitate towards gaming. At least you know, advanced gaming. One up from Monopoly. So
you said the M-word.
Yeah, it's not a dirty word. It's not a dirty word. So I think it's important to stay fresh and happy and just not get bogged down in all the negativity about retail.
Right, and there's always there's the stigma to it as
the, oh yeah, we've all felt that, I right? think, as gamers, right? I mean, I how many times have I been to, like, a Christmas party or whatever, where I meet new people and someone mentions My Little Men? You know, my wife usually. I should see Paul's Little Dudes.
Little Dudes.
Little Dudes. And they look at me like, I paint. Oh, you paint, what do you paint? You paint oil? Do you paint watercolor? Yeah. No, I paint scale models. Scale models is my term of choice. Oh, of what? Of trains? No. Of cars? No, I paint little soldiers. Oh,
army dudes.
Yeah, army. Oh, historical stuff. Not so much.
and it comes down to the concept of a hobby. It comes down to, am I going to spend $80,000 pimping my car?
Well, that's the thing. Oh, it's such an expensive hobby. Yeah. Show me a hobby that's not expensive.
You know, it's a
the
hobby.
Definition of hobby.
It's the definition of a hobby. And whether you're board gaming, I one of my friends and customers here, you go to his basement, and he has more stock than I do in his basement, you know?
Wait, who are we talking about here? Someone else aside from me?
Board gaming.
Oh, Brad.
Brad, yeah. And that's a hobby. Whether you're, you know, painting miniatures, whether you're pimping your car, whether you have a fetish hobby.
It's not the type of podcast, Dan.
It's a hobby, and you're going to put money into it. You're going to put money into it, and...
Money and time.
Yep.
And that's what we're here to suck from you. Your money.
Maybe I'll edit that last part out. Dad goes from, I want to build a community, I'm all warm and fuzzy, to, I want your money, give me your money.
No, we're here for the experience. We've always have been, and we continue to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do a good job. You've been my de facto gaming store for years. You know, we've had our ups and downs as customer and retailer, but
Dad was my primer.
Well, among other things, but you know, it's that's the other thing. You have a personal touch, right? And your store feels very personal because it's not just me. I'm sure other customers come in and they all know you and they know your staff. Like I said, they've been here for years, so we feel like we can talk to you as an individual, not as the store owner. So I think it adds a cool level to the store. I mean, there's no other gaming store I've walked into over the years, well, in recent years anyway, where I felt like that. It's cool. I'm certain it helps with customer retention too, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just being called by your name when you enter, and you're not just here to buy something and get out.
It's like cheers, right? Yeah. Norm.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. We're the bartenders
of gaming.
Gaming.
New expansion idea, Dan. Get a tap next to the cash.
If he could.
Beer hammer.
Yeah.
It's been brought up many, many a time.
Yeah. There's a store in the Portland area that has that, and they have closed weekend or night games with the beer. And
yeah, I've always wondered of being able to do both, being able to get the kids in during the day. And then switching it over.
Wow, I saw some pictures recently of a tournament for something. Was it Relic Knights? And it was being held in like a microbrew restaurant. Like they'd rented the restaurant or whatever for the tournament. And people are all there. There's giant like craft beer barrels like in the whole fermenting thing.
People do that a lot with the board games. They do board games night at pubs.
Well, we even have one in Montreal, right? We have a board game pub place.
Yeah, the Randolph.
And yeah. I've always wondered why they don't sell, but I guess it doesn't fit their...
That takes extra space, right? They'd rather have more seats, I guess, to have more people drinking.
I'm sure they're making more money off off the drinks.
Yeah, because people will buy three beers in the night, but they won't buy three board games, so I guess raw profit margin's probably better. Yeah. I mean, that's a discussion for another podcast. Cool. I think we pretty much covered everything we had to say.
Yep.
Dan, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We're going to take a...
Thank you, guys.
Oh, you're very welcome. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, do our closeouts. And yeah, so we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right, folks, so that's the end of another lovely episode of Geeks of the North. I'd like to take this time to once again thank Dan for coming along for this journey in gaming. It's getting late. Okay. So, Dan, plug the store.
Gamer's Vault. You're step out of this world and into the vault. All-you-can-eat board gaming. Buffet ici. 4986 Queen Mary. We're right across the... from the Snowden Metro line.
In Montreal.
Thank you very much. And we run leagues every single night. X-Wing, Netrunner, War Machine and Hordes, Malifaux, Magic, three nights a week, drafts on Mondays.
Your Warhammer 40K as well.
Escalation League, yep.
Yep.
Magic drafts on Mondays, Modern on Wednesdays, Friday Night Magic. And if you want to try something different, if you want to try something new, you'll probably find it here because we have a really good selection.
Awesome. And if they want to contact you, I mean, your Facebook page?
We got the Facebook page, so it's facebook.com/gamersvault.
And we'll put that link in the show notes as well.
At Enter the Vault on Twitter, info@gamersvault.ca. And you can always call us, 514-564-0445.
Awesome. Cool. So I think that's it. We have a shout-out, or I have a shout-out.
Yep, go for it.
Okay, well, I'd like to give a shout-out to our cast member, B. Steve, for being awesome and designing the new OnePlus Armor logo. They had a contest, and Steve, being a graphic designer, won. He also did our logo.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we mentioned it in the first episode.
So he did our logo. It looks better than the OnePlus Armor logo, but OnePlus Armor logo is still an improvement over what they had. And I think it's really nice of him to help them out, you know, to kind of soften the blow we're gonna give them when we beat them. You know, it's always good that Geeks of the North is helping the other members of the podcasting and vidcasting community. You know, community outreach is important to us, and we want to support our hobby in the best way we can. So, Steve, congratulations! You're an awesome guy, and OnePlus Armor, you're okay too.
Something else we mentioned before that we are part of the Geekcast Network. That, due to some naming problem with other networks existing, has been changed to the United Geeks Network. We're still part of the same group. It's the same cool peoples. Just the name changed.
And we've added a couple new podcasts, right? Yes. We've got Geeker Weekly that came on board.
Yep.
I think...
There's the new Game Crafter podcast.
That's right.
Based on the Game Crafter company that do custom printing for board games and card games.
Right, awesome.
And some reviewers, too, on YouTube. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff, and you can... Yep. Yeah, okay, so we'll put the link to the network's website.
Yeah, it's always in the show notes.
Yeah, well, I'm just, in case people don't know that. So it's going to be in the show notes. And actually, a bunch of us are going to Adepticon. So if you happen to like any of our content, could happen, you know, you can actually meet us at Adepticon.
And you'll be able to meet people from the other shows, like Jillian will be there from Geek Girl Weekly. Yeah. Jordan will be there from All Us Geeks also.
There's a bunch of us going to be there. Yep. So, you can touch base with us there. And on that note, I think we're done.
Bye, geeks.
Peace and long life.
Ciao, geeks. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth. Or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find the Game Crafter Official Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to the tabletop game print-on-demand company, The Game Crafter, and its growing community. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.